Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 38. The date is December 29th, 2014. This week we're going to be talking about CIA torture and how it ties into what is known as blowback. I am joined by Eric Taylor, Kirk Pettis, Chelsea Como, and of course I am Matt Winter. Eric, take it away.
All right, so this is a topic that Kirk brought up a few weeks ago, and we were going to discuss it last week, and because of the holidays we decided that was good to push it back a little bit. And I think, Kirk, you mentioned this just because it's timely. It's a topic that, kind of ties into, kind of the general group message. And, we could probably discuss some good points, right?
Yeah, I think, and it's just kind of like how the Edward Snowden revelations were. I mean, we all kind of knew this was going on, but now there's actual concrete proof, so to a fair extent. Mm-hmm. So it'd be something good to talk about. And I really, it kind of came and went. People just don't seem to care. And that's why I'd love to talk about it more, because it affects me personally.
Have you been tortured lately?
Oh, come by myself.
Don't torture.
I
suppose that's fair. All right, so I'll roll a clip here. It's
way too personal.
Yeah, 5.5 minutes long. You guys, just let me know when you want to stop. Otherwise, I'll stop it at times too to talk about some of the different points that are made. Here we go.
Secret that the CIA didn't want this report coming out. Why would they? There's plenty of stuff in there that they would want to keep secret. So the report is 525 pages long, but it could have been more than 6,000 pages, but that's classified. So the executive summary is now out, and it makes for interesting but distressing reading.
We did some things that were wrong. We tortured some folks.
It was a worthwhile program from which valuable intelligence was derived.
It doesn't work. It is counterproductive.
It is, by its very nature, a dirty business.
I will tell you this, using those techniques saved lives. My job was to protect America, and I did.
It was just days after the 9/11 attacks that George W. Bush signed a covert action called the Memorandum of Notification. This effectively allowed the Director of Central Intelligence free rein in conducting operations against people and interests thought to be terrorist-related. But it made no reference to interrogation and how to conduct it. 13 years on, we have this long-awaited report.
All right, this is your last chance. Camera.
Waterboarding is already a much publicised method, and Al-Qaeda suspect Abu Zubaydah's case stands out. The report says he was extensively interrogated. He was hysterical at times and suffered continuous spasms. In at least one session, he became unresponsive and was only revived once a medic had been brought in. But waterboarding was just the start.
I think we're back. Did.
You back?
Mark the time.
Yeah, we're here.
What did you...
The last thing we heard was he said... What did he say? Something about he was ending his statement.
He was basically saying the waterboarding was just the beginning of what they did to him.
So I lost you for about 2 seconds. So it wasn't actually. I think I might have lost you when I paused the clip to ask.
Oh, that's perfect. Then we could just keep talking.
Yeah. So yeah, what I was going for there is I was going to ask about your collective thoughts on torture in general. If there's anything positive about doing that, or if it's something that just absolutely shouldn't be done at all.
Are we rolling again?
No, we are.
Okay.
Well, I personally don't think we should torture at all, but I'll go ahead.
I think it depends on what your definition of torture is.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because I heard this recent report, you know, that just came out. And then the guy was like, they made me look at pornographic pictures. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, back in medieval times, they used to drive bamboo shoots underneath your fingernails. I mean, that's a hell of a lot worse than somebody saying, here, look at this picture of boobs and, like whatever. I mean, that to me, that's so minuscule compared to what could have been done. And
well, that's
also,
to me, propaganda is to make fun of the issue. It's an issue that creates laughter and it weakens the.
This is what the guy who. Wrong. That's what the guy who just got released was saying happened to him.
Well, like, oh, I mean, there was a lot more than that that happened. I mean, that might have just been like one little thing, but there's a lot more than that. Yeah,
and he said they forced him to eat with a feeding tube, which, like, that's kind of shiesty. Yeah, I'll agree with that. But at the same time, like, it could have been like electrocuting him on a daily basis. Or like, when I think about torture, I guess I don't think about it in the context of like.
So what you're saying is this is one of the lucky few that was very minimally tortured compared to
He's the one who came out and spoke out about it. I mean, it's not like there's like a – basically, I'm not trying to say that torture is good at all. I'm just trying to say, like, I don't feel like this guy really got tortured. Like,
Well, I mean, I guess what we're talking about here is not just this particular guy, but the techniques that they've admitted to using – post 9/11, which included, you know, waterboarding, which included sensory deprivation, which included, you know, threats about, you know, raping or killing people's families, which included some really, really horrific things.
Well, in that regard, I mean, like, sensory deprivation, there are people who pay money for that. It's like, I guess they don't.
Well, but that's. Okay, so with the sensory deprivation, what you're talking about, where people pay for that, that's something like an hour and a half at a time. And it's really interesting, the experiments that they've done with sensory deprivation that shows what happens to a human being under those conditions. And for a certain period of time, it can be therapeutic, but beyond a certain period of time, it can cause psychological damage. So, like, permanent psychological damage. So,
I mean, the episode
I've heard from a lot of people.
I'm speaking from what I've seen on, like, Vice. So Vice, who covers everything like that, the guy who was on there was paying for 8-hour sessions. Like just the guy from Vice was paying for that.
That's nice. But if you look at the torture report, they would sleep deprived for days, up to like 72 hours,
just before they go into the tank.
And that's what some people have said from bouts of torture that have experienced physical and deprivation like that. Those sleep deprivation, you know, all those kind of things are far worse than even the physical torture at times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because of the psychological damage.
Well, and let's think about this to go to your whole, you know, the sensory deprivation tanks and how some people choose to do that. Let's think about sex where it's consensual versus rape, right? Same act, but one is willing and wanting
exactly.
And one's not.
One's a choice, you know?
So one.
It's not the same act. That's the wrong thing to say.
One.
No, it's the same comparison.
Is painful. You know, one is traumatic and the other one isn't, and the only difference between the two is whether or not it's consensual.
I would totally disagree with that. I think rape is way worse than putting somebody in a sensory deprivation tank for a while.
The difference between
I don't agree with that comparison at all. But at any rate, like, I understand what you're saying. Like, one's done without permission. Like, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I don't think they compare.
No, I'm not comparing, like, what you're missing here is not, I'm not comparing rape to sensory deprivation. What I'm comparing here is the difference between how our body and our minds respond to something based on whether or not it's consensual. So an experience might be pleasurable or therapeutic when done consensually, but it can be traumatic and painful when it's not consensual.
Yeah,
and, so well, I can understand that, but I just don't see his rape and sensory depth tank being the same thing. Like, I just don't.
It's not, and I wasn't. They're not, and I wasn't going there with it.
Well, okay, that's fine. No, I understand what you're saying. How it could be worse. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I just feel like this is the wuss version of torture. Like, all right, if you want to torture somebody, you can do it, but you have to just fuck with them a little bit. Like, you can't actually torture them. Like, put a screwdriver into their knee.
Why do it
in
at
order
all,
to get
Matt,
them
then?
To do? No,
so
like,
so it's the moral ground of why even do the minimally evasive torture versus the full extent that it actually has gone on as well. I mean, the torture report revealed a lot of things. People have died. Do you not think that the people in the CIA that were doing it, that went home crying and said they didn't want to do it anymore, but were kept being forced by their superiors to do it? Do you think that they were just minimally torturing people, not doing it? So are they the wusses because they couldn't even keep the lights on for someone that was crying to turn off the lights?
Okay, so let me ask you this question. Let me ask you from the exact opposite perspective. Do you think that these guys were doing this because it was completely unproductive? Like, do you think they just did it for fun?
It was
the people in leadership.
Where's give me an example of it being successful for anything?
People did lobotomies, and that wasn't successful, but they tried anyway. Just because people have good they think that it might work doesn't mean that it will. I mean, and just because it's ineffective doesn't mean that they're doing it just for fun. They could very well have believed that it would produce something, but they could have just been wrong.
All right. So, now all of this said, I'm going to go back to what I always say. I've been trying to play the devil's advocate on this. I think a lot of it's totally fucked up. I can't believe a lot of the things that they did. Like, didn't some guy get frozen to death and there's like force feeding, not through the throat, but like through their butt and that kind of stuff? I mean, that's messed up.
That's covered in this clip. Maybe we should roll some.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. All right. But I just wanted to say, like, I'm not actually feeling this way. I'm just trying to get you guys jazzed up.
Well, you're doing a good job of it.
All right. I'll continue with the clip.
A detention site called Cobalt was created in 2002, thought to have been in Afghanistan, one of a number of so-called black sites around the world. It was called the Dungeon, and detainees were kept in darkness for days, if not weeks, without minimal human contact. Prisoners were shackled with hands above their heads, walked or dragged around naked while being slapped and punched. Some were suffering broken limbs at the time. Suspected Islamic extremist Gul Rahman was another profiled case. Deprived of sleep for 48 hours, subjected to continuous loud noise, isolated, stripped and left near naked on a cold cell floor. He was found dead. A CIA autopsy concluded he had died from hypothermia. Rectal feeding and rehydration was used on numerous occasions. It was a technique used to keep prisoners alive, although the medical evidence says only limited amounts of nutrients could ever have been absorbed.
I think that's what you're talking about, Matt.
Yeah, no, that's pretty horrific.
Okay, I'll continue.
It did much more harm than good, with inmates suffering excessive internal colon and rectal damage. The report says one CIA officer's email remarked that in the case of Majid Khan, they had used the largest tube they could find, and it was not done in a careful manner. Sleep deprivation lasted days. Self-proclaimed 9/11 attacks leader Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was kept awake for 7.5 days. The report says CIS director Michael Hayden knew about it.
And I think, Chelsea, that's what you're referencing, right? I mean, if you're paying for 8 hours of deprivation versus involuntarily having, 7 days of deprivation, there's quite a bit of a difference between the two, right?
Absolutely. I think they're talking about sleep deprivation in this case.
Yep.
And then, but sensory would be a little different. In addition to the sensory deprivation, they also did like sensory overload, where they put on like these really bright lights and like excessively like damagingly loud sounds for like hours and hours and hours on end. So like the opposite of sensory deprivation, like sensory overload, to where it's actually, well, causing like hearing loss and it's just ongoing for however long. It's completely different when you're choosing to go and meditate versus, you know, you're in a scary place amongst people, you know, who are not friendly, and you're being forced and you don't know how long it's going to last and all of the psychological, you know, components that go with that.
I feel like instead of, so let me ask you this. Do you think it would be more just if they were put on trial, a military trial, because obviously they're not citizens or anything like that, put on trial, found guilty, and then killed because they were found guilty of trying to kill Americans?
That contributes to blowback, which we'll talk about later, hopefully.
Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to say. I guess I haven't made up my mind about whether or not I agree with the death penalty or not. So I guess I'm probably the wrong person to ask about that.
I would say if you go up before a military
tribunal,
the chance of you getting put to death are pretty weak. I think that most of them would you just be sent to a prison.
Yeah, it wouldn't be
in
very
the first
likely,
place.
Right?
Not so. If they had the evidence to put someone to death, it would be a given. I mean, it'd be so much more straightforward than what we're doing.
So would you support that better, more than what's been done, where they've been jailed and?
No, I don't think either. I think, in a time of war, you have captives that you take care of in a humane way. That's what us as civilized people do.
You compare the reason, and you're right, Chelsea. It's the Geneva Convention, and the reason why they've been able to violate that is because they've called them non-enemy combatants because they're not actually part of any nation state. So they don't have to follow the Geneva Convention. So what's the perspective on that? I think that's bullshit. I think they're obviously an enemy of the state.
Right. It's a loophole, right? And the whole point of the Geneva Convention wasn't just, you know, for the sake of protecting certain people. It was us saying, you know, it was all of us saying, hey, we're not going to do this. We're going to treat people humanely, and torture is not okay. And it wasn't meant to be like, oh, well, if you're not part of a nation, then who gives a shit? Then torture, go at it, you know? This is obviously a loophole that they found so that they could do what they wanted, right?
Attorneys are really good at that.
No, here's the bottom line. Reagan signed a treaty in the late 80s that was ratified by the Congress that said we do not torture, period. So every act of torture from henceforth is a criminal act by our law system in America. It has nothing,
but isn't that
the Geneva Convention is something even totally different.
But if it wasn't conducted on like American soil, then I think what I read is the reason that they could get away with it is because it wasn't within the borders of the United States. It was outside the borders where the torture was actually conducted. So once again, another loophole.
That I don't believe that. I'd have to go look at the law or the treaty that was signed and ratified, but I'm pretty sure it didn't matter if it was in America or not.
That would make
and
sense.
It was just coming down from the top that it was okay to do, and the CIA was worried about it.
It would make sense. I mean, rendition or a lot of, you know, torture activity is not taking place within the United States, at least from what I've read and seen.
I think what Chelsea's saying sounds very reasonable, actually.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It's something that I haven't really thought about too much, but, I mean, if you put the pieces together, can, you know, any of you guys think of a story where this is actually taken place within the United States? Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything.
No, well, there's only 500 of the 6,000 pages were released, and this is just by what the CIA is doing. This torture report has nothing to do with rendition at all yet. Mm-hmm.
Well, and to speak to whether or not it was conducted in the United States, I mean, I haven't heard of any, but I also did read that there were a ton of tapes that the CIA destroyed.
Because they figured, all video.
Yeah, because they said the bad publicity associated with the destruction of the tapes would be much better and much more manageable than the horrors that the people would see if those tapes were released. So,
well,
like,
that's how this
they're like, it's fine. Like, we'll take the hit on destroying the tapes because it's going to be much better than if the tapes were actually released. So who knows? You know, what we don't know.
Well, that's what led to this torture report in the first place was that they started an investigation. The CIA director destroyed all video evidence and got away with it for a while. And then they kept doing more and more trying more and more reports. And finally, we came up with this one. And it's still a heavily redacted information. So it's 500 pages, so a 12th of the complete total, and it's only what the CIA was doing. It doesn't even include what the military was doing.
Right.
The military has prisons set up all over the world and was also doing this stuff in Afghanistan and Iraq. And then through the rendition program of funneling people for the last 30 years we've been doing this, if not longer, of sending people to Syria, Jordan, Egypt, have tortured. And that's just a blatant, to me, that's throwing the Constitution out the window. No respect of law for us as America, and just doing what they want to do. And we're facing the blowback from it all. And we've been in war for how long now? Over a decade?
Well, and like you said, you know, it's no respect for, you know, the Constitution, but at the same time, in addition to that, it's no respect for the value of human life in general. And I feel like as Americans, we're led to believe that we're the good guys, and we talk about these countries with disdain, these people who have, you know, that allow for civil rights and human rights to be where they're taking advantage of, or where they're, you know, like where women can't vote, oh, these people are so bad, or where, you know, people are, you know, victims of this or that or the other thing. We look down on other countries and say, well, they're not as civilized as we are because look at how these people have been treated. And we take this, like, moral high ground, even though it appears we don't have any. I mean, like, I was talking to somebody the other week, and they were talking about, like, Al-Qaeda or somebody else who, like, they conduct, what's it called, decapitation, where they, like, take people's heads off. And it's like, oh, well, they're, you know, they're basically animals. Like, they're not people anymore. They've lost their humanity because look at how they're acting. And I said, well, what do you think, like, we're doing? Like, how are we better than that? You know, like, we look at ourselves and think, oh, well, we're the good guys with our, like, red capes going in to save the day, but we're doing really horrible things as well. I mean, we hear about the horrible things that other countries do, but we don't really look in the mirror and say, what if we allowed our government to do to people?
Well, that's the true reason why I wanted to talk about this as well, is, I mean, What is the point of this? What's the point of us losing our moral high ground with the world standing? We're already became the second biggest economy. China just surpassed us about the same time this came out. And yeah, I don't know.
But we're for just, me, it's not about a game. It's not about, like, keeping tabs and, like, points and stuff. I don't care about, like, oh, let's be number one, and that's like the reason why we should have this moral high ground. No, it's about, what do we stand for? What does this country stand for? What do we as a people stand for? And if one of those things that we say we stand for is protecting the dignity and the rights of human beings, then this should be something that does disturb people and upset people.
I just wanted to correct that. We're still $7.5 trillion over China right now, and they're at $10 trillion for GDP.
yeah, the U.S. is doing fine. Anyways, I'll roll on. There's a couple minutes left here. Roll on through the clip and we can continue forward.
The thing is, there were lots of people who didn't know about what was going on. Maybe not surprising for a secret service, but what about the president, defense secretaries, National Security Council? All were supposedly in the dark as much as the detainees. The report found that on many occasions, the information given to the White House and NSC through emails or via Senate committees was false or fabricated. President Bush was not told about the enhanced interrogation techniques until April 2006. Was that so he wouldn't be implicated in the future? But even the White House joined in, reportedly. An internal CIA email said the White House was extremely concerned that the then Defense Secretary Colin Powell would blow his stack if he learnt about what was going on. And the CIA misled the press with dud info that at times tallied with the dud info they had given to policymakers. The torture was used to extract good intelligence from suspected terrorists about possible future attacks. This report says it didn't do that. CIA bosses continuously touted the success of these torture techniques to Senate committees, but the information they used in that context was false. The report said that none of the 20 cases of counter-terrorism successes attributed to the brutal techniques used and information received. And the report highlights emails which say that in cases where information, whether that was good or bad, was obtained without force, the torture still happened. Lies, misinformation, brutal torture that failed to get good intelligence. But the CIA has defended its actions. It says it has saved lives since 9/11. President Obama may have banned harsh interrogation techniques in 2009, but has also withheld more than 9,000 pages of relevant CIA documents, according to the report.
So torture, in whatever future form, remains a policy option for future presidents. And even though the CIA's torture methods have been laid bare, there's still plenty we don't know about.
And in my mind, when talking about even the validity of various torture techniques, I mean, if you're an individual who's been through sensory deprivation or sleep deprivation or any number of techniques, there a fairly good chance that the information that you're going to give is going to be false just to get out, of whatever situation you're in? I certainly, I would entertain something like that if I was in that, in that type of situation.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's why, for U.S. citizens that, aren't, part of the war, or aren't enemy combatants of any sort. They have very strict rules about how you can interrogate someone because it can lead to people confessing to things that they never did, just because they're under such stress and duress that they would rather confess to something they didn't do, just so that their the torture will end.
Yep.
So, yeah. And I mean, and if they did, sleep deprivation for 7 days, that person is hallucinating out of their mind at that point. I mean, anything they say, who knows what that means? Probably nothing.
Yeah, so yeah, it would be interesting to, in the context to really understand from a, from an agent perspective. I mean, are you trying to hit certain metrics or goals, get certain, you're being tasked to procure specific pieces of information and you can, it's just a checkbox on a list. And you're like, I got this after, 7 days of, sleep deprivation or X amount of hours of sensory deprivation or overload, so those type. To me, that type of behavior should probably be looked at, in any context. If you do apprehend an individual, torture or not, you want the information to be valid rather than just getting it for, you know, for its own sake as well.
And okay, so I don't know if this will make sense in context or not, but like when I was taking a fraud class and they talked a lot about like one of the things that would motivate people to like distort financial statements, for example, would be, setting unrealistic goals. So people felt this insane pressure to meet the goals and that pressure then led them to rationalize committing fraud in one way or another. So are you saying that maybe, likewise, the CIA agents may have had goals set by their superiors, that then pressured them into feeling as though they needed to do anything it took to reach that particular goal?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm suggesting. And you could, like any job, you have your goal structure, goal sets, or you have an agenda for a specific situation, and that will, potentially provide a motivation to use whatever tactics are necessary to fulfill those goals, even though, if you look at it from a objective perspective, you're probably not going to get valid information. So it's a systemic type of issue rather than, an issue specific to, various employees or agents.
Well, what if you're of the like that think this war is total BS and it shouldn't happen in the first place? So now all we're doing is actually creating terrorists by torturing people, terrorizing local families that see their family members whisked away, never to be heard from again. And so it's creating the resentment in the first place of us even being there. So it's a complete lose-lose situation. We're wrapped in a never-ending war. And back at home where it's being argued, well, we need to preserve our system. Well, what extent are we willing to take to preserve this system? This system of debt, of a two-party system, lockstep and barrel, that our rights are being trampled, the Constitution's thrown out the window, the president's just doing executive action after executive action, and that's a growing trend from president to president now. And it seems like there's a rule of law for one aspect and then completely different in another.
So what you're saying is, what are we trying to preserve when it seems like all of the values that we've had and all of the things that we've stood for seem to be dissipating, and we're using tactics that we don't approve of? We're using any means possible, throwing our values out the window to preserve something that no longer exists. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's precisely. I mean, to me, when I think of America, it was built on the universal principles, and that we were morally superior, taking the high ground. And from that, we reaped the benefits for a while. It took a while to straighten things out, and it wasn't perfect. And I think something could be even more perfect in the future. But how can us as Americans even call out for a more perfect union while we're sitting here backing what our government's doing today? And to me, it's...
Are we backing it, though, or are people merely apathetic?
Apathy and ignorance is pretty much backing it. They feel they have no control of the government. They're not even saying anything. 70% of the Republicans on a poll said they agree with the torture. And not a majority, but a large percent of the Democrats as well. And it's...
But that clip just said that they weren't given appropriate information. They weren't given accurate information about what that meant.
Who wasn't?
So, according to that clip, they lied to the senators about what techniques they were going to employ or what techniques they were employing. So they might have said, yeah, we're okay with that. But what was that they said that they were okay with exactly?
Well,
it might not have been all of this.
Let's see what our Congress does about that. I doubt they'd do anything about it. I would find it far superior for us to have our own trials here in America and try the people in power that instigated these policies and get to the bottom of it. And for Americans to cry out, this is not what we do. This is utterly reprehensible on a world scale. And we're going to try our own people in power that implemented this stuff. I haven't heard anything of the sort. That's the only way to combat this stuff. And it's no one cares. Everyone cares more about that they can go to a movie that has a supposed threat against it, and they're an outrage that, and all of a sudden now everyone wants to see the movie.
Kirk, I don't think that that's true. I think
there was more outrage
people...
about the interview Kirk, on the street on than the whole torture thing.
Hold on, okay? I think that when I talk to people, they feel powerless. They feel helpless to do anything about it. So just because you don't see everybody standing out in the street doesn't mean that they don't care about it, and it doesn't mean that they're okay with it. So jumping to that conclusion, I feel like, is very unfair.
I've talked to plenty of people that just don't care. They want to see America's system continue.
I don't
know. Just talking to anyone, family.
But that's not representative of the population at large, Kirk.
Give me an example of the outcry against torture. There was a far more outcry. I just going and dealing in public. People are always talking about the interview now. Oh, we're going to stand up for freedom. Those North Koreans are going to stop me from watching that movie. Give me a break.
Do you want me to give you an example of the outcry against torture?
The who?
The outcry.
Has anyone?
This guy has. I'll roll another clip here.
You used to work at the NSA. There is also the CIA. And yesterday was released a document on CIA's. Are you still here?
I am here, yes.
Okay.
The torture program.
The torture program. What is your reaction when you read all these pages? 500 were released, 6,000 are the basis. What was your reaction when you learned about the torture policy?
I worked at the CIA as an actual officer of the government during the closing years of the torture and rendition program. I was not personally involved with it, but many people in the agency, they talk about the concerns they have about these programs. So I had my own suspicions, and of course I was aware of what had been alleged in the press. But the Senate investigation and the report that they have released is extraordinary for a number of reasons. I could not help but be deeply saddened and, to a great extent, angered by what I read. The things that we did as a result of this program are inexcusable crimes. And what we see that's, I think, quite dangerous in the United States debate that is happening literally today, right now, on news channels and newspapers, is that proponents of the torture program are saying that even though there are international obligations to prosecute these, because they are serious crimes, torture cannot be justified. Under international law, it simply cannot be justified on the basis of emergency circumstances or the orders of higher government officials. That does not excuse you from culpability of crime. And yet we see this being argued as precisely that case, which threatens to overturn the standards that we set at the Nuremberg trials in World War II. And this is deeply corrosive, not just to the moral authority of the United States and the West more broadly, but the standard rule of law as applied around the world. If the United States can allow its officials to torture and not hold them to account, what does this mean for much more authoritarian states? What does this mean for governments in Asia, in Africa, and elsewhere around the world? If we can run a rendition, a kidnapping, a detention program, a torture program, keep it secret for years, and then when it is revealed, hold no one to account, what does this mean for the future direction of our society, for the rule of law, for the accountability of senior officials? How can we hold the smallest officials in government to account of the law if we are willing to make broad exceptions for the most senior officials in government. And when we talk about what we saw in these programs, we saw individuals who actually lost their lives as a result of detention, as a result of the treatment that they received under the torture program, and the fact that individuals actually lost their lives. They died after being chained to a concrete floor in an unheated room, half naked. And rather than having the officer who ordered that behavior be prosecuted, he actually received a monetary bonus from the Central Intelligence Agency of $2,500. These are things that leave a stain on the moral authority of the United States government. And if we do not prosecute them, we have to investigate them and hold them to account. We cannot move forward as a
society. Pause it here. You sound like you have something to say, Kirk.
Sorry.
Was it when he said prosecute them?
No, yeah, I'm all for it. I think that's the only way to get back to a moral and ethical country is to start holding our government accountable to the laws that they're breaking.
How do we do that? That's my question. I mean, how would we go about doing that?
I think you have to open a grand jury in maybe D.C. You'd have to petition the Attorney General. I don't know exactly.
And I think that's the hard part. And I mean,
or actually have outrage on the street, popular, you know, where people are calling for it.
But, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but it seems to me like the government doesn't give a shit about whether or not we're outraged. Like, they don't listen to us. I mean, maybe that's the cynic in me, but it doesn't matter how many people are running around on the street saying we're not okay with this. They don't really listen to us. I mean, and I feel like that's why you're not seeing people out on the streets, because they don't think it's going to do any good.
I don't care about seeing people on the streets at the time. I talk to a lot of people, and it's just not on the tip of anyone's tongue. They don't care. It came in one ear and went out the other. Anything
but we're
involving
talking about it tonight, right? And, yeah. And people will hopefully.
There's plenty of people that have talked about it in libertarian spheres, and Republican talking heads try to twist it into a good thing. That's still why 70% of Republicans think it's a good thing, and I it boggles my mind.
Well, I mean,
I just don't get what we stand for anymore.
It's been very effective. I mean, I think that, you know, the common person can listen to a lot of the rhetoric and go, oh, well, I guess they were trying, they had best intentions, they were trying to keep us safe, you know, and you know, the conversation gets slanted in a direction outside of like, whoa, let's just talk about whether or not this should ever be acceptable. And like in that last clip, he was saying, you know, on a global scale, torture is not acceptable, even in states of emergency. And I feel like in America, what has tended to happen is that in states of emergency, people's fears and anxieties get exploited. And that creates this opportunity for the government to take liberties, to do things that normally we would say are not okay, but people are afraid and anxious. And when people are scared, they don't act rationally. They act irrationally. They act out of emotion rather than out of thought. And we need to start, you know, calming down and thinking about this in a rational way and going, hey, is this ever acceptable? Like, let's stop thinking with our emotions and let's start thinking about it, you know, with a clear head.
Well, it's the argument that it creates safety is completely an asinine argument in the first place. It actually makes us less safe. It creates more terrorists than we'd ever project, thwart, or imprison.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly, but unfortunately, propaganda is very, very effective, and if people don't do the research and if they have faith in, you know, the government, and they believe, you know, if they're optimistic and they believe that the government really, truly is acting in their best interest, they will trust them. they will trust that they're doing the right things and they're doing them justifiably. And they're placing their trust in that higher power, essentially. And we need to stop blindly giving that trust away so easily. I mean, we shouldn't so quickly go, well, I trust that they're doing all these things in our best interest. We should be continuously questioning their tactics, their methods, and their motives. And thinking about the consequences of the actions that they take. And not only do those actions, you know, represent the CIA, but they represent us as a people. I mean, because like when I think about, you know, other countries and what their governments do, I mean, fair or not, I do find myself, you know, associating that with the people of that country as well. And I know that's probably not fair, but I think it's a natural response to associate the actions of a government with the people that they govern, the people that are allowing that government to stand. And it's horrific, the fact that we can be in, you know, 2014 here, and we're seeing these brutal, inhumane methods being employed, and it's been acceptable, and nobody is being forced to be accountable for it.
Yeah, well, I just think it shows the nature of Americans. They don't care about the rest of the world. All what they care about is the system that we have developed here at home. And that I'm just talking in broad generalities here. But it's
I disagree. I think people care a little bit more than you give them credit for. I feel like you don't give people credit, like, at all.
I wish I could get an example of you proving me wrong right now, but
should we roll with this clip?
But how much you care about people? I mean, I guess it's kind of an opinion thing.
No, exactly. I'm just talking in generalities that the American public just does not care that we go around the world taking people's lives and taking them from their homes to so-called protect our interests because we had two planes fly into New York City. Give me a break. It's an outrage.
I think the U.S. people went to war for 14 years after that.
You know. Yeah, and it's a joke.
What? I mean, I don't care. That's they went to war for that long.
They don't care. That's my point. We don't care that we go and take people's lives, the millions of people we've killed in the last 14 years, and the thousands of lives, the millions of lives we've uprooted, destroyed. We've destroyed these countries. Their economies are in shambles. And then we just go up and we steal people in the night, steal people in broad daylight off streets, kidnap people, throw people from the skies, and sit here and pretend that we're just doing all right. And oh no, there might be a terrorist that comes and attacks the movie theater. So let's freak out then all of a sudden again. It makes no sense.
I think that a lot of people are out there just trying to survive in their own lives. They're trying to keep a roof over their head. They're trying to keep food on the table. You know, I mean, we've come from a really serious economic recession where people lost all of their retirements. People lost their jobs. Their security, and they had to take, you know, their focus from that global scale and bring it back down to home so that they could survive on their own and take care of their immediate family. And so I think that people's attention wasn't as much focused on, you know, what's happening with the government, what's happening.
I thought you just told me I don't give people enough credit and that people actually care.
I'm not saying that they don't care, Kirk. If you would listen for a second without jumping to conclusions, you would hear what I'm saying is that we just came from a period of time where people really did have to focus more on their families and their survival. And they, you know, some people don't have a job where they can listen to a podcast all day long and catch up on the news. Some people don't have that luxury. Most people don't have that luxury. So,
well, that's,
we
I'm
have
just
to take that into
my
consideration
point that
as
that's
well.
What,
Chelsea, I'm not saying
you
that they
all
don't
over
care.
Me when I said it, a mass generalization of a personal opinion that Americans don't care, and you told me that I don't give people enough credit, and now you're
wow,
sitting.
Wow, wow, relax, holy cow, relax, relax. Seriously, this is a podcast. This is not an argument. We're not doing this right now.
Right.
There you go.
And so let's, Eric, do you have any more clips?
No, I haven't finished out the
Stone
clip.
Let's finish that clip that you got there.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sounds good.
All right.
Edward, the senators did the job, not a whistleblower. Is it a good news for American democracy?
I would actually argue that it's quite sad news. Because within the report, which I understand is quite long, so the media has not necessarily read and digested all of it, there actually were whistleblowers who sought to come forward and reveal this behavior. And they failed. We see medical officers who said that these were extraordinary ways of applying procedures in ways that were not medically necessary. And yet they did forced feedings through men's rectums. We saw, obviously, the application of torture techniques such as waterboarding, of applied hypothermia, of sleep deprivation for 180 hours. Individuals who viewed the torture were demoralized by it. They thought it was wrong, and they shared these views with their colleagues. And you will see in the third bullet point that there were people who were even moved to the point of tears. There were people who, in the fourth point, indicated that they would leave these sites and would not serve there because they were opposed to the programs. And we saw people in the sixth point who, when they saw the video.
That's an interesting point right there. Some people, you know, mentioned that they would just leave than continue to participate.
I mean, that's enough of a statement to me just to say, hey, I'm fed up with this. This is bullshit.
Right, and to say that to your employer when your employer is the federal government, you know, pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's not. There's no joke there at that point. And if you're willing to say that, you have to be convinced as an intelligent individual that the work you're doing is completely inconsequential.
Exactly. I'll continue to roll this.
You know, they lost faith in the very mission that they had. But ultimately, you're right. The program did not end despite these protests. And we have to ask ourselves why. Why, despite the knowledge of all of these individuals who disapproved of the programs, who resisted the programs, did they not stop? And the report actually provides an answer to that. And we see within that the leadership of the Central Intelligence Agency was contacted by these individuals, by these officers who protested, who had broken down in tears.
So there were whistleblowers that brought this up the chain, and they basically were ignored.
No, I think it's worse than that. I don't think they were ignored. I think they were intentionally shut up.
Fair enough. I'll continue here.
And prosecuted.
These programs probably were not legal. And they questioned not only the legality of these programs, but the effectiveness of them. And the highest official in the CIA's counterterrorism apparatus, Jose Rodriguez, sent official reports. They put this in writing, which is what the Senate reported on, saying that these questions, these concerns, these protests from officers of the government who said, this is not legal, this is wrong, this will come back to cause problems for us in the future. He said such language is not helpful, and he demanded that they stop placing this in official channels. The reason that this program did not stop is not because officers within the Central Intelligence Agency were not aware that it was wrong. They knew. It was because the public was not aware that it was wrong. This program...
And actually, to be fair, Kirk, that's what you were referencing earlier, right? I mean, it's either ignorance or apathy amongst the public on this issue, right?
Yeah, and to me, it's this exact same thing. People don't want to know the truth. They don't care.
Or they have the Jack Nicholson clip right here. You can't handle the truth.
That's true. All right, I'll continue.
Stopped not when CIA officers protested within the agency. This program stopped when newspapers told the public of what we had done in secret without the awareness of the public.
So despite the senator's work, you still believe the United States are in a deep moral crisis?
I do. I think the Senate's report is a strong step forward in terms of acknowledging the reality of what we had done. But this does nothing in terms of holding the officials who ordered this behavior and the officers who actually directly engaged in torture themselves to account for what is criminal behavior. If we can argue that torture is justified, you know, if these serious crimes are justified in this circumstance or that circumstance, because they have a positive effect, if we can say torture helped here, so it's okay, what could we not justify? I mean, how different is torture in terms of the horror of the crime in regards to assault or rape?
And I think, Chelsea, that's what you were referencing earlier, right? There is consensual agreement and non-consensual agreement, and that when you're talking about torture, if you're trying to state that it's a positive mechanism, you have to really put that in context.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, yeah, I think you put it pretty clearly there. And I mean, I think we can all agree that what they did wasn't okay, and it was pretty horrific, and inhumane. And I think it is important to consider that very often when we have a traumatic event in this country, if there's something that happens, we'll say, well, in these emergency circumstances, we will justify doing this thing that is otherwise illegal, but we're in a state of emergency, so we're going to allow it this time. But I think that we need to step back and really think about that. And what are the moral implications? Like, oh, so if we're in a state of emergency, we can kill people. We can essentially murder people via hypothermia or a variety of other torture mechanisms, and that's okay. Murder is okay because we're hoping to get a bit of information that may or may not protect people. I mean, that just seems ridiculous to me. That just seems insane. I mean, how can we justify that and still consider ourselves civilized?
Agreed.
George Washington.
Yes.
During the Revolution, told his soldiers, anyone caught torturing will be put to death, will be hung or shot. That was how he dealt with the threat of us as a nation torturing people. Now, that's leadership that stands on something, morality and ethics, and to a higher calling of something greater than a nation state, of government affairs for an immediate reaction. Just the fact that we had to go to war with Afghanistan and Iraq right away, the justification wasn't even there. People say, oh, we got attacked, we had to do something. What did we get attacked for? We didn't even know the reason for. And this is total lone wolf here, but there's the redacted pages out of the 9/11 report, I have a feeling, tie back into the direct blowback of previous CIA operations. And that is what is not being held out there to the public to see, that of the direct blowback of stuff like these torture report of other information that's coming back that's going to cause more blowback in the future. And it just makes no sense. And we do not need the government. The government is out there doing, and that's what I tried to highlight, that our government is set up and our people of America cry that we need to be governed, that we need the government, that we need these laws and regulations that produce, that have all of a sudden Eric Garner, he's selling loose cigarettes on the street in New York City because the taxes are so high, because of the regulations, that we have to have our police officers,
getting a little off track, Kirk,
law enforcement, go out there and enforce the law and end up killing people on our streets at the same time. It's, to me, it's the same thing. We have this air of superiority in the world that we can, oh, we got a tax, so screw the rest of the world. We're going to go out there and do whatever we feel necessary to protect our freedoms and liberty when we're not even respecting it here at home. It makes no sense to me, and I just wish people would wake up to it.
Fair enough.
That's why I like to talk about it.
I'll hold the rest of this.
Kirk, let me ask you this. Would it be better to say, not wake up to it, but get more passionate about it? I think people know what's going on. They just don't take a very strong approach about it. They don't get excited about it.
Here's the quandary we're stuck in. You got to go and get more government intervention to counter the government intervention. It shouldn't be that way in the first place.
Wait, what do you mean? What are you talking about?
To be reactive and to go and proposition government to get back on track, to get back to the roots.
I don't think that's required at all.
That's not required. I wouldn't say so either.
You're
coming to one conclusion, Kirk, of one possible outcome or one possible method of enacting change instead of understanding that there are many different options out there available.
I think Ronald Reagan signing a treaty that says bans torture for regardless, no circumstance whatsoever, and 15 years later we throw it out the window.
Well, they found loopholes.
What's the difference? It's just that's yet to be confirmed.
Yet to be unconfirmed. But. No, but seriously,
Who cares if it's a loophole? It doesn't make sense in the first place over the overarching fact of the treaty in the first place.
No, I agree with you there. We're on the same page. I mean, I don't think that it's acceptable even if somebody found a loophole. I just don't necessarily buy into the whole idea that it has to be government intervention that would solve the problem, but I do think that people need to be held accountable at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, here's a theory that I've heard of why the Mayan civilization ended. And at the time, it was the most sophisticated and largest economy in the world, and yet no one even knew about it. And why it all of a sudden just disappeared is because the people just got up and said enough of the government and walked away, went back to living in the jungle. Once the ruling people started demanding more and more of the people, then that's when people just fed up and disappeared. Now, when you say stuff like that, people get scared because of, what are you going to do? How are you going to feed your family? We're all tied into this working, you got to work 40 hours system, and it's all intertwined. No one can be hardly, I would have no idea what the populace percentage is, but I would guarantee it's under 10 and could be self-sustaining for any given amount of time.
I think that's a topic for another day.
Well, I just think it all ties in together, but.
Well, how about we finish up the clip and then see where we're at that point.
Let's do it.
A government could say that rape has a positive effect because we have a declining demographic crisis in the country. Therefore, it helps us. Efficiency is not an argument for criminal behavior. Efficiency has no place in the debate about right and wrong of torture. And we must not accept efficiency as a justification for the criminal activity that occurred within the last decade.
It's the first time you speak in France. What do you know about us?
That's it. That's the extent of the
cheese-eating surrender monkeys.
Yeah, the torture stuff in that clip. So, I thought he brought up some good points. He's dialed in for the most part on what's going on in the intelligence community. So,
now one question that I have for you guys, because I mean I don't have the answer to this.
Sure.
I mean, I understand the necessity of confidentiality of certain government operations for national security and things of that nature. So how can we possibly hold the government accountable when they don't have to be accountable for all of their actions?
That's a tough question, because really you have, I mean, I have more clips where you have Obama and Bush claiming they weren't aware of what was going on. So you have really autonomous agencies that are acting in their own self-interest without, you know, any type of transparency, which causes issues. And I think Kirk alluded to this a little bit earlier, that, you know, that transparency within government would go a long way to tackling problems like this. But how do you get there? I'm not sure. I have no idea how you get to that point.
That was pre-show, but open source. Open source the government.
Like, I have, like, okay, so this is just, I'm throwing it out there. It just came into my head right now. So it could be a horrible idea. I haven't thought through all the implications of it. Would it be possible, because, like, we heard about some of these, you know, government employees who walked away and tried whistleblowing and it just wasn't effective, but they were whistleblowing to the people that they were whistleblowing on, essentially, right, which doesn't really work. It's like, you know, telling your boss that he's corrupt. I mean, how far is that going to go, right? Not going to be effective. Would it be possible if there would be some sort of like forum or outlet for government, you know, employees or agents to report directly to like a public agency, like a people-centered, you know, whistleblowing outlet. Like, I am a government employee and this is what's going on. And, right? Like, where they could anonymously submit, you know, things like this directly to the public without fear of,
look at Edward Snowden that we just had a clip from. Do you realize that cannot come back in face
trial? That wasn't anonymous, though. I'm suggesting an anonymous outlet.
Can you guys hear me?
Then why would you trust it?
No, I think you're cutting out, Eric.
Okay.
I think you cut out. What did you say?
So my thought was, I mean, there's been an institution that's essentially provided that function, WikiLeaks, and they've been just prosecuted and brought offline as much as possible. So this is something that's been done, but it hasn't been successful because, you know, individuals who or institutions that are potential of being targeted have made concerted efforts to take that type of group offline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been done, but maybe that ties into to what Kirk mentioned pre-show. More open source, decentralized type, that type of communication, watchdog groups or something along those lines that are watching various agencies that can't so easily be taken offline.
Here would be my point. let's get back to moral superiority and broad, and not have anything to hide then from our government. Why do we have anything to hide? Because we're got our tentacles spread out throughout the world, far beyond what our Constitution ever gave limits to our government to do so. And yes, we live.
Well, I'm
a great
huge
life.
Fan of imperialism, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
But I would just like to say that no one can use this torture argument as the justification for a greater good. It's not admissible in the court of law for what the treaty that Reagan signed. And therefore, it goes exactly back to Snowden for him not being able to come back to America because he can't make the argument that it was for a greater good. He will be prosecuted and found guilty regardless, even if it was for the betterment of America, that the population views it as.
I think that's reasonable, and Kirk. I think you've got a good thing going there. I agree.
It's not my thing. It's just how it is.
I'm saying, I like what you're saying. That's what you're saying is correct. I don't disagree.
What I'm saying is, when people argue that it's justified to keep us safe and to preserve an American life, it won't be allowed in the court of law.
Come on, Kirk. You're the first person to say that justification and legality are synonymous as the same thing.
The only way that it would be ever doable is if there was some ticking time bomb scenario and some police officer federal government agent had to torture someone to do it, and he'd have to be faced. The only way he could get away with it is by facing a jury, and a jury could nullify it.
Right.
But from a federal law stat, it would not be supportable.
All right. Well, I like that as a finishing point. How about you guys?
It's good enough.
Not really.
I'll take Kirk's little chuckle. I'll take Kirk's
done.
Little chuckle. Isn't enough? And enough. All right, everybody. This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 38. Thanks for joining us. It's been Eric Taylor, Kirk Pettis, and Chelsea Como, Matt Winter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Adios, mofo.